Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
How are things going?
Things are going fine.
Are you being bitten by bugs? Do you have to rethink your process to stop all the bugs from destroying your life?
Stop the bugs. I don't.
Nope. No bugs for
me.
You?
I thought not
you
my
just,
problem.
I thought you just revised your novel. I guess you got all the bugs out.
Oh, no, Jason. I have bad news. You never get all the bugs out.
No. Then the reader of your audiobook finds math bugs.
Yes, I was going to say, I was sitting here. I actually have some notes on Bayern Agenda typos and stuff that I've been meaning to send to my publisher, because although the likelihood of that ever getting fixed in print is very low, because it would require the book to go into a second printing, which is probably not happening.
Ebooks.
It could get fixed in the ebooks, and I've just been lazy about it because I know there's more, and I should like compile them all and send them in like one big batch. But at times that feels demoralizing, especially when you have a long email from somebody who read your book and tried to find every single possible error, hypothetically. You don't know anything about that, though. Nobody ever emails us typos in our articles.
No. Well, I don't see them anymore, so I filtered those out.
But the corollary to that, which I talked a bit about on Twitter this week, is I finally decided, like, I realized I had inconsistencies in my books. And so I was like, you know what? I need a place to put all these notes and sort of canonically have a storage place, because I had, so Scrivener lets you make stuff that's not part of your draft. And for years I had stored information just like in the Scrivener file, but in like, you know, ancillary documents, which meant that sometimes I had to look things up. It required me to open that manuscript and find it and make sure I had the most current manuscript, etc. So and then I had some stuff in notes, because that's just where I jot things down. And so I spent a long time investigating wikis and setting up wikis on my Linode server, which was very exciting. And I got some help from folks in the Incomparable and Six Colors communities, because I know some of this stuff, but a lot of it is over my head. But that was an exciting week-long project that I have now turned into a great procrastination product, where I can just write stuff in my wiki instead of writing stuff in, you know, books that I should be working on. What a silly pastime.
Yeah. I just created a page on your wiki.
What? There are spoilers on that wiki, Jason.
Oh, no.
Just so you know.
Although I will say, I'm sure there are spoilers for where you go from here, but I have read book three that isn't out. So
you have, but there are spoilers that go beyond that.
That's interesting. Well, I made an entry for planets.
Planets.
Let's see. Edit. I gotta make a change, because look, it's a markdown preview. Oh, that's so cute.
It's so weird, though, because there is two separate editors, one that shows up when you create a page and one that shows up when you edit a page, and I can't.
Yeah, this is totally different.
Out. Yeah, it's a strange little piece of software this week. This is a wiki called Gollum.
Yes, my precious wiki.
Exactly.
How do I get out of the editor, Dan?
Okay, you hit, there's like a little floppy disk icon at the top. You hit that to save your changes.
A floppy disk!
I know, but here's the thing.
A floppy disk!
It doesn't kick you out afterwards, so then you just hit the back button and reload. So some of this is not super well thought through, but, you know.
Oh, there it is. All right.
It works. Now I have to see.
All right, I created a page for you.
You created a page.
About Earth.
I want to know.
Planet
about Earth.
Planet Earth, which exists in your universe as a planet.
Oh, and there is a spoiler for my next book in there that you wrote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope I didn't spoil you. Oh, no.
It's mostly accurate.
Right? I think that's right. That's what happens at the end of that book, right?
It's close.
Okay.
It's close. I'll tell you after the show.
All right. All right.
Anyway, so yeah. So I made a wiki that apparently only you and I have access to. And I mean,
you're saying the Earth is not mostly harmless? Oh, no. I need to change that.
It's harmless. It's extremely harmless, or mostly harmful. One of those. Anyways, I like this software at least, and this is not an uncommon. This is sort of a genre of things, but it's built on top of Git, which is kind of interesting. Which, for you know, less technical minded people, is essentially a versioning system used for deploying like open source software projects. But also, all the files in the Git repository are essentially just stored as markdown files. So worst case scenario, I could just download all of that
and you'd
and
have
slap
all the files.
It into something else.
Yeah.
So that's me like is that. Appealing. But it has its quirks, as you've already seen. So
yeah. So the idea here was you could potentially do this in an app, but like a Scrivener document, you use those. Those are per manuscript. Yeah. Plus, you've got to worry about syncing and stuff like that. And you decided to go. This is not. We'll talk about Apple bugs later, some other time. You decided to go with something that was on a server. You have a Linode server that you use for your blog and stuff, and put it on a server so that you don't have to deal with like cloud syncing or other kind of syncing. You've been bitten by syncing before. You just wanted it to be like, can I have a private wiki for me that's simple, that's easy to use and easy to maintain and set up, because you had to do all of that, that you could get from anywhere on the web in order to keep track of this universe you're building.
Yes, exactly. And that sort of ticked all the boxes for me. And some of it was just sort of personal preference. I tried a couple different versions, and this one felt like it had the best, like, I mean, Markdown support was key, because that's what I write in.
Right.
It just felt super lightweight. The UI was very simple. Like, all of that was like, that's what I'm looking for. I need a handful of features, and mainly I just need places to write things and ways to link between pages. That's sort of the key thing. Like, it's a wiki, right? Like, I need the ability to interlink. And I've used, as I mentioned, you know, I've used VoodooPad in the past, which does a great job of this for if you just want like an app that runs on your computer. But then, like you said, you have to worry about syncing your file, and you have to have, I got bit in the past because VoodooPad stored its stuff as bundles, and there were cloud services that didn't play well with that. So all that stuff put together is like, oh, I mean, I can set up a super simple web server. I just need the right software to put on it. And this seems like it fit the bill, but we'll see if I end up continuing to flesh this out. Yeah, it would be nice if I had enough fans to let them write it, but you know, that's not going to happen for a little while at least, so I'll just do it myself.
All right. Yeah. Well, that's a kind of fun behind the scenes thing of something people
there
can't.
People said they like behind the scenes questions, so there you go.
It's good. So Apple bugs, you wrote a piece on Macworld. I'm going to get back to Apple bugs now. There was that Bloomberg story that said Apple is going to... It was really interesting. I did a link to it on Six Colors. Mark Gurman story that basically said... it had a bunch of different kind of stuff in there that they're going to institute a new system for building iOS, because what happened was that people would check in this code that was not their daily builds on the iOS betas internally. And they would be so broken because the stuff that would get checked in would be so broken that the people who were supposed to be testing it, it would go stretches where they just couldn't even use it because it was unusable. And that means that they couldn't test it. And that they put a new system in place, which Steven Sinofsky, who used to work at Microsoft, reacted on Twitter and was like, they didn't do that before. Like, he's like, wow. So that was interesting. And that also there was tidbits about like how they rate it on a system, like on a scale of stability, but he didn't reveal what the iOS 13 stability score was. It was probably pretty low. And then so it's all just about like Apple recognizing that they need to do better work at keeping, at getting bugs out of their betas and shipping a less buggy final, and that this was a rough fall. But also at the same time, Gurman says that basically they haven't scaled back. They may throw some iOS 14 features into iOS 15, but at this point, iOS 14 is not looking like a stability release like iOS 12, that it's still pretty ambitious. So, you know, we want to check our bugs, but we're also not going to scale back maybe as much as you want us to.
And I took a cue from something that you said, and I was trying to find where you had said this, and I realized it was on a podcast, and I wasn't sure which one, so I couldn't.
Welcome to my life. I'm not sure which one either, Dan.
It was
what
the
podcast
idea.
Is this?
This is Upgrade. Welcome to Upgrade.
Oh, from Relay FM. This is Upgrade. Episode number. We don't do episode numbers on this show.
Nobody wants to talk about that.
It's one of my favorite.
It's on to Snell Talk.
Oh no. That's one of the things I like about this podcast is I don't number it. It's just not numbered. It has no title. No number.
I think
we don't care. Whatever.
I think it was on an Upgrade episode. It was in reference to the keyboard, and you were talking about Apple sort of being more transparent about. Talking about like we realize that this is not the keyboard that people want, etc. We're working on something else, period, right? Like they could, and your point was it goes against a lot of stuff that's deeply ingrained in the way that Apple does business, but they could change it. They could just decide to do it. And like that was kind of my point was with this as well, was there are things they could do that would potentially certainly help them maybe from at least an optic standpoint, but also possibly help them from a reliability standpoint. And they kind of go against the way that Apple does business, but they could change that. Like, nothing is literally stopping them from doing it. It's just sort of the ingrained culture and deciding to do things differently. And in this case, it's the idea of, look, Apple is already doing things like pushing features, not just from like future versions, right? But like stuff that they announced that was coming in iOS 13 that is not here yet, or stuff even in iOS 12 or previous versions where it rolled out later in like point upgrades, right? That's already happening. So rather than kind of trying to slightly sweep that under the rug, you know, they'll put the little things on the iOS site where it's like coming later this fall, right? Like, people are still invariably like looking, oh, well, I heard about this feature. Where is this feature that they said was coming? Why isn't it in here? How do I use it? Just embrace it at this point. Like, if you're going to do it anyways, at least be proactive and like put the spin on it. But like, look, here's our roadmap. And I think you've suggested this as well before. Here's our roadmap for iOS 13. This is what's coming in iOS 13. This is what's coming in 13.1 that will ship in October. Here's what's coming in 13.2, which will ship in January, etc. Right? Like, just get ahead of the game there. And I think that would make a big difference, because you at least are setting expectations at that point, as opposed to looking like you just don't have your act together and stuff keeps slipping. You just have to decide to do it differently. And that may be a harder impediment than many other things. But I think it would behoove them to kind of rethink the way they're doing software, especially as iOS is now, you know, 13 years old or whatever. It's a mature product, right? Like, the classic macOS lasted 17 years roughly, and it had way fewer major quote unquote releases. So, you know, the breakneck pace is really only hurting you.
Yeah. So I noticed today that Microsoft delayed their earbuds, and there's this question of, like, you know, this is a classic thing, which is, do you overpromise and underdeliver? Yep. Do you underpromise and overdeliver? Do you hold your product close to the chest until you get that moment where you release it and it's done? The annual cycle thing is a problem, right? Like, because if you always come out with a phone and an OS release in the fall, then everybody knows that's your deadline. And so you've forced yourself into this tight deadline.
Right. And by that nature, I mean, even there, right? And I talked about this on the Rebound, which just went up a little bit before this. They have still pushed stuff that was required of new phones. Deep Fusion didn't ship in iOS 13. They couldn't get it done in time. They shipped it in a later point release. I mean, there's nothing, again, and this is weird, I understand, and it's counterintuitive, but there's nothing that mandates that all the features that work with the new phone have to ship in it. And you could argue that it doesn't look good if they don't, but you could also argue that they're doing that anyways. Like, they're already slipping features that work with only the new phones. So just find a better way of communicating that, right? Like, if for no other reason than it will lessen the number of people who complain that your game isn't like where it should be. I don't know. It strikes me as it feels like they're playing defense, and I think they should be playing offense.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Yeah, I don't know. It's hard, right? Like, this is, I keep saying this thing about, like, that's why Phil Schiller gets paid the big bucks. That's why all these people, like, Apple's an enormous entity, and what they're doing is incredibly complex, and they have to do hardware engineering and software engineering and multiple platforms and all that. It's like, it's hard. Like, we can criticize it. We can talk about the outcome for users. It doesn't matter. Like, this is the other side of it, right? Which is, if it's a bad experience for their customers, it doesn't matter that it's hard, right? It doesn't matter.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter that it's the degree of difficulty that they tried. Doesn't matter if the experience for the user is bad. And this is one of those things that I feel like we have the push and pull among the people in our audience and among us and our colleagues about criticizing. I mean, this happens with anything that you criticize, right? Is a lot of times the argument is, but it's really hard, or they're trying really hard, or they really, you know, they worked hard on it. Like, yeah, I can appreciate that from a human scale, but in the end,
they have to, but it's not easy.
But in the end, this is what they put out in the world, and they're asking people to buy it. And what's the experience like? And the way you get around that is not, but no, you should like it because we worked hard on it. The answer is, don't put it out if it's not good enough. That's the answer.
There are things where it's okay if you tried hard and you didn't succeed. But when you try hard, you don't succeed, and you're essentially, you know, charging people money for it. Like, that's a different story. It's like, it's not me writing my term paper. Like, oh, you know, I tried really hard. And the answer is, well, maybe you get like a little bump for effort there, but that's not the same. It's not the same thing. And Apple, and this is also something that we talked a lot about on The Rebound this week, so go check that out. But I feel like their percentage of unforced errors, especially in the last 2 weeks or so, man, they have not been having the best November. I mean, we've had everything from Guillermo Rambo's account getting closed and then him getting stonewalled. We've had Tim Cook not correcting the president when he essentially lied about the factory. We had the all perennial sort of China stuff in the background, which got dredged up again this week, as John Gruber pointed out in a post. They just removed like ratings and reviews from the online store, which is a weird choice. Like, I kind of understand why they did it, but it's also optically, it's weird, especially when you add it to the pattern of all these other things they're doing that seem designed to be like more insulating themselves from criticism or just from the world at large. And it's like, you guys are a $1 trillion company. You don't have to act this way. You really don't. It smacks of this kind of bizarre insecurity that might have been appropriate for Apple in the mid-90s when they really were on death's door. But,
yeah,
you know, you're the most successful company in the world, guys. You know, act like it.
Yeah, the Guy Rambo thing is weird. So, you know, he's embarrassed them. There's no doubt about it. And he's a registered Apple developer. And one of the tools he's used to embarrass them is things that they have put left in betas. And technically, I wrote about this. I mean, technically, is he violating the developer agreement? Yep. He is. But everybody violates the developer agreement now. And they've no longer even made noises about it as a thing. Like, they don't even pay it lip service really anymore. And that's probably because this company is less obsessed with this control of this kind of part of it. They have a public beta now on top of that, right? Like, there's so much there.
The publicity is good to them to a certain extent, too.
Sure, and you pay for that. But if you clamp down, nothing would change. If you clamp down, people would just, it would be, I said, whack-a-mole, right? Like, people would just keep creating accounts and have it be in friends and all of that. And, you know, could Guy Rambo have been... I think the sequence is the truth here, is that he could have done subterfuge, but the reality is he developed software and then he got into this kind of like spelunking through the code and finding things, and it happened in that sequence. So he already had a developer account and he already had his software. So if he's going to, unless he's going to use a pseudonym or something like that, which he didn't want to do, he's in it, right? Whereas the smart thing would have been, if he had known what was going to happen, is that he would have set up a business for his software not connected to him by name, and then he would have set up another account that maybe was also not connected to him by name and then reported via the name or whatever. You know, there were ways that he could have done it, but he was pretty straightforward about it. And, you know, is Apple within their rights to suspend his account? I suppose, but the truth is,
it's not a good look.
It looks bad. It looks kind of, first off, it's pointless. He's just making an example of them. And the second, the truth is, the sin is Apple's. The sin, he is smart and is noticing mistakes they made. And so to punish somebody arbitrarily because they noticed your mistakes is a really, really bad look. And my guess is that in the end, this is going to be chalked up to all a big misunderstanding, but I kind of don't think it is. I've been doing a lot of woulds and coulds, and like, I would hate to think that Apple would be this petty. It may be, you know, and it may not be. It may just be a screw up, but my guess is that there's somebody who is this petty inside Apple, and that this bad publicity will whoever that person is will kind of unclog the drain there, and that person will be like, all right, okay, fine.
Right. It's a compounding error too, because it's not just the fact that they did this, it's the fact that they didn't communicate anything, right? Like, and that they stonewalled his attempt. And, you know, my colleague Lex Friedman made this point. You know, Apple does like to, you know, essentially say, don't go running to the press, but at a certain point, there's no alternative.
Yeah, and they say don't go. That's a classic Steve Jobs line, actually, that's in there. You can see the Steve Jobs stuff that's still in there, but it's like, don't go running to the press. That doesn't work. just talk to us. And it's like, well, I mean, no, it does work. It does work.
It absolutely works.
It totally works.
You don't want that, but that doesn't mean that it's not the best thing, right?
Like, yeah. And you don't want everybody running to the press. I get it. But the fact is, it does work. It does work.
And if you don't want everybody running to the press, then you have to be responsive. You have to deal with these problems and not just like keep silent, because there is no answer in which it's don't go running to the press and we're not telling you anything.
Yeah.
Anyways, bad couple weeks for Apple. You know, I kind of hope they turn things around in terms of just like, you know, none of this is stuff that is really going to hurt them in the long run, but it is uncomfortable. And for those of us who are, you know, cover the company and generally feel positive about the company, it's disheartening at times to see this sort of string of, you know, arguably again, unforced errors. I mean, why make these choices? They seem baffling at times.
And again, I think the answer is somebody in a position to say, let's jerk this guy around, did it, and
right. It's just a shame when it's a situation where it's like, on the one hand, we're going to jerk around this independent developer who's made us look bad, and on the other hand, we're going to kind of accede to a lot of things with China that make us able to do business there, right? Like, it's punching down, as opposed to when you're the most valuable company in the world, and you know what? Maybe you could take a stand or punch up to someone or something. But it's an unfortunate look where they're kind of stuck in the middle, and I think they picked the wrong directions to flail in.
Yeah. So. What else is going on?
I kept my AirPods that
okay.
I bought. I've been using them a lot. I really enjoy them, and I still have some nitpicks for me in terms of, you know, the sort of nature of these, but they are so light and easy to use and so good at so many things that I felt like I couldn't give them up. I really have been wearing them kind of everywhere, and I did not think that would be the case, but here I am. I guess I'm a convert.
Interesting.
Yeah, I believe me, I am the most surprised.
Yeah, I'm still loving them. So, you know, I don't know what else to say. I'm still loving them. They're good. They work for me. They're good in even more situations than the regular AirPods were, which is a big thing. Let's see what else is going on.
Do you want to talk about that Washington Post story that came out this morning? I've only looked at it very briefly. But
oh, I don't know if I've even seen it yet.
Oh, boy. Yeah, this was a one about essentially there are apps, iOS chat apps available on the iOS store that have had more than 1,500 complaints of unwanted sexual approaches, many targeting children.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, good times. So, yeah, that I mean, again, this is a weird position to be in, right? And this sort of talks a little bit to that other yet another story that Apple is somewhat contentiously involved in, which is the whole thing with removing vaping apps. Apple is again stuck in that position of being the arbiter of what goes in its store, and deciding we can pull entire categories of things, and at the same time, stuff that they don't pull is certainly possible for being used in unfortunate or you know, malicious ways, not all of which is under their control, right? Like, I mean, if we're talking about video chat apps here, you know, there's only so much you can do to police the content or how people use those apps. Not to say they couldn't do it better, but like,
right. I mean, they're in the end, they're, they're policing the app, but there is, you know, but they have often exerted, you know, if it's got open internet things on it, you have to mark all of the things that it could possibly contain.
Right. Right.
And set it at a 13 plus or something like that. Like they, right. They've definitely had that, which is on its own a ridiculous thing. 'Cause there should be like a flag that allows unfettered access to the internet, and that's a parental control, but I don't think right. I still think they don't do that. This is one of those things where being the arbiter requires you to
actually be the arbiter.
And make decisions and get blamed if you don't and get blamed if you do. And the vaping apps one is another good example of that, where that's a weird case where, as people have pointed out, like, you know, you may take a stand, but because you're controlling the entire store, you're completely banning things. And like, that includes like apps that are used to configure the devices using Bluetooth. And so now you're basically making your phone incompatible with these devices. It's weird. It says, like, the benefits of Apple curating the store are many, but mm-hmm. it does show you all of the different ways where Apple being a curator is this is the downside of it, is that you get in these situations where everybody who's got, I mean, and it's true, everybody who's got a special interest or a crusade, a cause, a whatever it is, will it will call on Apple to get the bad thing, the evil thing out of the store. That happens, and it's not just China, although it is China, it's also like public health advocates saying the vaping stuff shouldn't be in the store anymore.
Right. And I mean, in this case, it seems like also something they could be doing more of is, it sounds like a lot of these complaints were lodged via the like reviews and stuff on the apps. And I don't know how closely they pay attention to those, but it seems as though, you know, if the Post could find them, then Apple should be able to find them. And perhaps take action based on that, or at least review things.
It sounds like Apple's developer group does not, and people in charge of the App Store do not read app reviews, right? Like, they're like, don't read the comments, right?
Right. Yeah, I get it.
But if you have a terrible thing, and you're like, this terrible thing happened to me, like, how do you communicate that to Apple? And they think, I know, I'll write a review. And it's like, it doesn't.
Right. And it's like the, you know, it doesn't work for Apple to be like, well, no one ever told us. It's like, yeah, several people did tell you, actually. Yeah. Like, that's
they posted
tough.
Reviews that you didn't see.
Yeah. You no longer have at least plausible deniability, really. Like, that's kind of on you.
I think... So, okay, all right, this is never going to happen, but I'm just going to say it. I think Apple's entire approach to user reviews is wrong. This is a sound of me getting a column idea, too, by the way. I think it's very old. I think it's very old internet. It's more or less unfettered. You know, I follow the Amazon movie reviews Twitter account, like... User reviews on Amazon are similarly, useful in aggregate, but very rarely useful in specific.
Right.
And mostly populated by people who have an axe to grind.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Apple, of all companies, allowing, how shall I put this? Allowing stuff, wrong stuff posted by dummies to be on pages that are hosted by Apple, to be in Apple's apps, is a huge mistake. Like, I think it's a huge mistake. I would say, does Apple let people write dumb reviews of Apple TV shows? They do not. But apps, they do. So I don't know. I mean, I guess like people like to feel like they're being heard, although clearly Apple's not even listening, which I would say is also incredibly irresponsible. I know that they moderate for like content and stuff, but they're not like listening for complaints and addressing them. I know developers listen, but developers also roll their eyes at a lot of the comments because it's often something that's just wrong.
Right.
Or a positive review with one star, which is another classic. I wish that they could do something different that would allow some, also that it gets gamed, right? That's the other part of it.
Yes.
So I don't know what the solution is, but I don't think this is the right, I think Apple should change their policy. I think that filling in a box and giving it a star rating and then posting those things to the App Store is I get why they started there, but it's literally the least they could do, and they've left it for a decade.
Right.
And I would scrap it. I would try to create a new rating system and maybe let people do one line or something, or if freeform text is allowed at all. If I were running the zoo, I would be saying we need to completely change how we handle user input on apps.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I think it's tricky. I mean, it's interesting, too, because you look at a lot of other places and certainly while places like Amazon have marketplaces and allow you to write comments and do ratings and stuff, there are also lots of third-party sites, right, where those become kind of authoritative, right? Like, Amazon is not the place I check, as you said, if I'm trying to decide whether or not I'm going to like a movie.
Right.
It's unfortunate, for better or worse, it is the place that a lot of people check if they're going to like a book or not. But, you know, there's also Goodreads, which, of course, Amazon owns. But it's still sort of nominally independent.
But, you know, Goodreads, don't get me started about Goodreads reviewers. Yeah. But I do believe that they've read the books and have opinions, right? Where the problem is a lot of these are like, they use the app briefly. They don't care. They write a review. I don't even know. Like, and it's so easily gamed. You know, Yelp reviews are the same way. Like, this is the problem, right? Is that, again, I think there's some value in aggregate. But the individual reviews, you know, I don't know. And then my other complaint is the prominence of it. And now Apple has de-emphasized the individual review prominence in the App Store over time. I was noticing as I was testing a bunch of podcast feeds in the podcast app for iOS the other day that if you want to listen to podcasts in the podcast app on iOS, like, you really can't avoid having the text of user reviews in your face. And as a matter of policy, I don't read reviews of my podcasts. I don't. It's not healthy. I'm not interested. And I'm sorry to people who think that they're helping me by criticizing me in your podcast review. I don't. I'm doing what I'm doing. I'm not interested in your catty remarks. And the people who say nice things, it's awesome that you say nice things. Thank you. But I that's not why I'm there. And I had that moment with, this is what I started thinking about these user reviews, is like, wow, the user reviews are right front and center in everywhere in the podcast app. And I don't like it. I don't want it. I'm not interested in it. Like, get it away from me. But Apple, again, they just, you know, they built a system once, a review system, and they just inflict it on all their products. And it's like, I think it's the wrong system. I think it's unhealthy. And they're not even, as you pointed out, as this story points out, they're not even reading them for, like, when people are like, oh my God, this terrible thing. It's like, no, no, we're not even reading.
Yeah, I admit that I sometimes do read them, but usually for amusement. They don't impact how I do my show. That doesn't bother me at all. But, like, I do definitely read them sometimes just because I was like, I'm curious if anybody's saying anything. And usually they're terrible. And I just kind of be like, well, that's like your opinion, man.
I read them by accident sometimes. So, like, the Game of Thrones flashcast that I did with Monty Ashley and Brian Hamilton, I read a review on there by accident once. And it was, again, because I go to these pages because I'm checking to see if things are working and stuff. And then they're in your face. And it was somebody complaining, and I've gotten an email or a tweet about this too before, which is like, I can't believe these guys do a Game of Thrones podcast. They're not qualified to do it. They can't remember the name of this character who was on 15 episodes ago or 19 episodes ago, three seasons ago. And so they're not qualified. And it's like, oh, that's our thing, right? We just watch the show and talk about it. We don't watch it three times. We don't do research before we talk. We watch it and talk about it. And it's like, okay, I mean, I guess you should start your own podcast, sir, rather than complaining about ours. But that's our thing. And so it's like, yeah, that works as intended. That's just how it is. If you're a casual viewer and you don't remember that guy from three seasons ago, that's probably relevant in some way. But I will say, and that just dead serious here, I have had instances where I've accidentally seen a podcast review of something that I was involved with where the review was so awful that it soured me on the entire experience of doing the podcast. It's absolutely happened, which is why I now have a very strict don't look at the comments policy. Because, you know, the fact is we're all human beings, and you know, that one, I got to give that jerk credit, like, got in my head. And I kept thinking, if that's the kind of person who wants, you know, if that's the show he wants, and that's the kind of person who's listening to this show, I'm not sure I really am feeling it anymore. And, like, you know, that's just, that happens. So what I'm saying is, I'm sorry, but, like, these reviews, I mean, look, sixcolors.com, we have a very lovely Slack community, and that's also part of it, is like, if you've got skin in the game, it's different. If you care, it's different. The problem is the people who are gaming the system, the people who are driving by, who enjoy like the internet's favorite pastime, which is to drive by, stop your car, open up the door, drop some garbage out, and then drive away. That's the internet's pastime. But I will point out, Six Colors doesn't have comments, and that's because we worked at Macworld, which used to have, doesn't anymore, comments on articles, and I thought, oh no, I'm not interested. Like, I wrote that story about Guy Rambo, and like, if I had comments on Six Colors, the comments would be full of like, it's his fault, he should follow Apple's rules, and it's like all these comments that like, they're dumb, and I and they're predictable, and I'm not interested in sharing my space with those dumb comments. And yes, I'm also turning away incredibly clever, smart discussion, but not that much of it, and there are other places that could go. And so, you know, I'm a believer in like Gruber from the beginning, was just like, no, that's not going to happen. And every now and then one of my articles gets linked to on Hacker News, and people are like, oh, they're talking about it on Hacker News. I'm like, nope, not interested. Not interested.
Yeah, it's
so.
It's,
so yeah. Why should Apple? So this is what I'm saying, is I know Apple should be concerned about like apps that are in their store that are being used for terrible things, and that they should monitor that more. I think Apple should be concerned that there are dumb things and bad things that are posted on their review system, because it was poorly thought out, and is a vestige of another time, and is used to game the system by unscrupulous people.
Yeah, not much to...
shrug emoji.
Not much to get out of it, I guess, at that point.
Yeah, other than the aggregate, which is the thing I keep thinking. We actually talked about this a long time ago at IDG, and it was never really implemented or well implemented. But like, what I wanted to do for our user reviews was like a questionnaire kind of thing, a mini questionnaire, which was like, how would you rate this product? But also was like a few questions of like, what did you like about this? Like, I get this sometimes on surveys, right? Which is like, oh, hotels.com will prompt me, because I book through them a lot, book hotels. They'll say like, tell us what you thought of the hotel. And it will be a lot of like, instead of write a lengthy review, although there's a space for a text box, but it's like, did you like the ambiance? Did you like the service?
Right.
Did you like,
right.
And you click those boxes. And like, getting data from customers to aggregate in and use some intelligence to say, this thing is liked because of this, and it's disliked because of this. I would rather see a system that does more stuff like that. I think that's a more useful system, because I do think that the aggregation of sentiment is more powerful.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I am also, as a person filling those things out, I am way more willing to fill out little boxes of numbers than having to write, even as a writer, than having to write something.
I would say, especially as a writer,
annoyed.
Which is like, how much are you paying
annoyed.
Me to write this review? No, I'm
yeah,
not going
right.
to do it.
I just get so annoyed. It's like, oh, you want me to like form cogent thoughts for your survey? Ugh,
also,
happen, man.
Also, just the truth is, when people are going to be far more likely to respond to something. I mean, the hotels thing is good because they do it every single time. And so for me, it becomes like, yes, I will do a very short survey about this hotel for hotels.com. But so often, like Yelp reviews are a great example. It's not, hey, you were just here. It's I was offended and now. And so they get the knives out. People. So like, I'll go to these Yelp reviews for restaurants, and I'll be like, a review from 4 years ago where a guy didn't get silverware, and he's irate because he had to ask for silverware. And I think, you know what? What relevance does this have in my life? I hear 4 years ago, you didn't serve silverware to a guy. Like, it just doesn't matter. I don't right. care. But I.
How do you defend yourself?
But I will admit, like, going to Eugene, Oregon, you know, for Jamie's college stuff, like, I have done hotel reviews that are like, it's fine, like, click the boxes, don't write anything. But I was really ready, the bad hotel we stayed at. I was like, yeah, oh yeah, we're doing this. And I actually wrote a couple of sentences and clicked a bunch of boxes. And like, so I get it. I get that it's much easier to try to get revenge over a bad experience than it is to help, you know, praise something that's good and honestly, that is diametrically opposed to the way that I approach evaluating products, right? Which is I'd much prefer talking about something that you haven't heard of that's great, or why something is good or why I love something, than raking something over the coals, especially if it's something you've never heard of, because it bugged me, it offended me in some way. It doesn't mean I don't do it, but it's not what I prefer and it's not what I try to do. And that's the opposite view of like how the internet reviews things.
Right. Oh, yeah. You don't trust the internet? That's not a thing that you... No.
It's full... Because the internet is made of people, and people are humans with human nature, and human nature is, as I just described, that you get worked up over the things that bug you, and then you kind of let drop the stuff that was like, oh, that was good, that was fine.
Right, exactly. Yes, that is the... That's the human bell curve in some ways, I guess. Ugh. Like, you really love it or you really hate it. And if it's the middle, it's just kind of...
Happy Friday, everybody!
Happy Friday! Please review my book, but only if you really love...
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can't review this podcast because it's not on iTunes.
Dodge that bullet.
And yeah, I mean, this is also why I don't say, like, review our podcast on iTunes, which I probably should, because what I should probably say is, please review, give a good review to our podcast on iTunes, and if you don't like the podcast, don't review it.
Just stop listening.
But what I should say is, like, I won't read your review. I'm sure there are bad reviews up there, so write a good review to counter it. But I'm not going to read it, so thank you in advance. Like, literally, it's just like, thank you in advance. And most of them, when I do searches for these podcasts as I'm adding them in, I get, you know, most of them are really highly rated, you know, and there's one crappy review, and, you know, that's just how it goes. But it's just, I don't want to see it. That's it. It's just, it's not healthy for me to see it.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's the same reason that there are certain people I've filtered out of my streams, because I just, you know, it's not healthy for me to see somebody who complains about, like, there are people I know, and then they are complaining endlessly on Twitter about, like, politics and things like that in this super scabrous negative way. And it's like, I can't see, even if I agree with them, I'm like, I can't see that.
It gets overwhelming.
I need that.
Easy to get dragged down into that.
I need that out of my life. So yeah. Anyway, we're happy that you are in our lives, dear supporters and subscribers to Six Scholars. How about that for a pivot?
You we like.
You we like. And you can go to that Slack, by the way. If you're not in the Slack, we have a Slack. You can log in to the member page on Six Scholars and get a link and go sign up for the Slack. And you got an email when you signed up. Like, go in and say hi. There's a lot of people in there. There's a lot of chat. There's a lot of different channels.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm experimenting with new stuff for Six Scholars, but it's going to be a while. In 2020, I'm hoping that I will get it together enough in 2020. I've actually spent months on it now to do a new kind of new version of Six Scholars. Same design. I actually really like the design. I'm kind of okay with it just going on and on and on forever. Thank you to Krista Mergen for that. But I am thinking of doing some more things for subscribers, like basically doing a technical overhaul of the site so that there's that if you're logged in as a subscriber, you will see that there's a new secret podcast. You will see that there's a new newsletter or that there's a new article from the newsletter that's just for you. I'm hoping to do some of that. And then that would lead to this. You get a new personalized feed for this podcast too, but that's a next year thing because it requires software and templating and
software
stuff. It proceeds. I spent most of my morning in CMSs yesterday, and that was
been there.
Different. It's like setting up a wiki. Oh, I brought it all the way back around.
All the way back around, full circle.
Well,
let me tell you.
You and I have been editing the wiki during this podcast, so I hope it's better now. It's a wiki anyone can edit except no one.
I haven't checked it since the last time I looked.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there's more stuff in here. This is great.
Yeah, just a little, not a lot, but a little. I also found
Very
an
cool.
inconsistency in the pages that you were linking to where you named somebody two different things, so I tried to fix that. But anyway.
Oh, wow.
It's fine.
All right, now I got to find this.
All right. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.